Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network,
home of comedy,
culture,
adventures,
and ghosts.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this Christmas episode, we watched Black Christmas. Black Christmas is a 1974 Canadian slasher film directed by Bob Clark and written by A. Roy Moore. A sorority house is terrorized by a stranger who makes frightening phone calls and then murders the sorority sisters during the Christmas break.
Merry Christmas, boys.
Merry Christmas to you.
Ring-ding-a-ling to you,
Thomas. What a beautiful time of year it is.
Yeah.
What a beautiful time of year it is to watch a very fucking scary movie.
Holy hell.
I did not expect
what
we were in for.
Yeah. No.
I actually thought it would be a little bit of a treat.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, I thought it'd be a goofy Christmas-themed slasher.
Yeah.
And it is a Christmas-themed slasher. It is not goofy.
No. I waltzed into this, tinsel around my neck, Christmas hat on, Christmas sweater on. Very hot. It's very hot here in Australia.
Yeah. You were sweating.
Sweating buckets, but ready for some schlock.
Damo, it's 32 degrees. You're like, yeah, I'm going to have some egg, warm eggnog.
I'm in the Christmas spirit, Thomas.
I think, though, to be honest, we should have known from the tagline.
Yeah.
Because the tagline for this movie is fucking incredible. Mm. It's, if your skin doesn't crawl, it's on too tight.
Yep. Which is great because it's something that sounds creepy, but is actually meaningless. Like, I don't actually know what that means, but I love it regardless.
But I also just thought maybe it still sounded a little bit fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. I got sucked in. Margot Kidder is in it.
I was going to say, thought, had the Scaredy Boys girlfriend, Margot Kidder.
Oh, Margot. Oh, she should have done more stuff. It's a shame.
It's such a shame, dude.
She reminds me a lot, actually, like her voice. Mm. Her voice is quite similar to Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, is it that kind of like Hollywood?
But I think they both got style. That vibe of no one's going to fuck with them.
No.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Margot Kidder is great in this. Just there's that great beat where she's at the cop shop being an absolute menace.
Yeah. And then she's later a menace on, the whole time.
Yeah. Later on, the sergeant chief guy's like, hey, who else is here? It's like, Barb's upstairs. She's sleeping. Mm. She's not feeling very well. He's like, is that the woman who was here earlier today? And she's like, yeah. He goes like, yeah, we should let her sleep. Yeah.
What about the whole drunken rant she does about the turtles that can have sex for 3 days straight?
Yeah. she's fantastic. She comes into like that whole scene at the cop shop. She's being really antagonistic. And then she like stops fighting, just turns her back. Cracks open a beer can.
Yeah.
It's like breakfast.
Yeah, yeah.
She's also at a Christmas party getting that kid drunk, being like, you're absolutely a snucker.
Yeah. What does she give the cop at the desk? Is it like a line? She goes, there's a new phone extension.
Yes,
it's called fellatio. And he goes, how do you spell that?
So funny. And the fact that like that feels like a one-off joke. And then it comes back around so
in
funny.
In such a big way.
The two cops are just pissing themselves laughing. Yeah, and he's like, it's dirty, ain't it?
Yeah.
He's so angry and he's like, it's dirty. Ah.
He's such a shit cop.
Oh, he sucks, man. He fucking sucks.
Yeah, this is really fucking good, guys.
I think we still thought we were in for the fun vibe and then the first phone call came through.
Yeah.
And that's fucking hectic. All the phone calls are really disturbing.
Truly. Like, there are like these little moments of levity, like the one you guys just described, where you're like, you're really getting a feel for these characters. You're like, oh, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. Also with the house mother, the woman who runs the sorority.
She's
just got bottles
Sherry.
Of- Sherry just fucking in bookcases, yeah, in all the hot. She pulls the toilet lid up, yeah, and lifts, yeah, the string, and she's got more alcohol. It's great.
She has that bit where she's like going through something, finds a box, takes it out. That bottle's empty. Yeah. Like, damn it.
Oh, and like when the dad of one of the murdered girls shows up and she's trying to hide anything that's horny in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
She's,
yeah,
a really good character. Because she's so funny.
She's supposed to be this like, I've got to protect these girls, but she just kind of loves them and she's,
yeah,
a
but she's also
and,
like, yeah, I'm going to let you enjoy yourselves and have a fun,
right,
time.
You're young, have fun.
She's
yeah,
a good, she's a good time.
Terrific.
That
Terrific
sorority
character.
House feels like it would be very fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
The outfits are fantastic. Mm. Part of me is like, ah, I should have been a college boy in the 70s.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm an adult man.
You would have lived at that house, Tom.
Well, no, that was a sorority house.
Yeah, but you would have lived there anyway, I think.
I would have snuck in.
Yeah,
you
would have. No, you just would have been invited. You would have been invited in,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. But not in that way that the murderer sneaks in.
No.
I would have been like, Tom, do you want to crash your party house? I would have been like, Margo, yes, I do.
Yes, please. But yeah, back to the phone calls. Like, so you have these great moments and then you have these phone calls and you're like, no, they're awful. So I did read that, like, so for when they're actually on the phone, when they're filming it, just the director sort of saying some things off to the side, nothing too bad. Because basically he didn't want their reaction to be too big, because obviously what they say, especially for this era, is fucking through the roof.
Explosive, yeah.
It's explosive.
A lot of C-bombs.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a lot of C-bombs, a lot of dick talk in the first one. And then just like disturbing sounds.
Agnes and Billy,
you can't really get your hold on it, but it's just like, and it sounds like multiple voices, yeah, somehow.
Is it split personality? Is he actually murdering someone while on the phone?
Right, and you don't know. And the not knowing, I think, for us as an audience, is like maybe the worst part.
Mm.
Really, like, fucking, yeah, again, way more than I was expecting. They, yeah, really fucking nailed it.
Yeah. It does some really nice stuff, too, where they, for ages, just sort of like the subplot with Jess and Peter. And she's, the actress plays Jess, Olivia... I could look it up, but my phone's in my pocket, and I'm, yep, not getting it out. No, I'll get it out. She deserves my respect.
Olivia Hussey.
Sorry?
Olivia Hussey.
So she's in Romeo and Juliet, that, yep, one, that Italian one from like the 60s, I think.
I've never, yeah, even seen this. So you said you watched it in school?
We watched it at school. When we did Romeo and Juliet, we watched that one and then also the Baz Luhrmann one.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember like the Baz Luhrmann one been around in school, I think.
Mm, well,
yeah,
the thing about the one in the 60s is it's quite a controversial one. So it's an Italian film. She's an Argentinian actress. And when they made it, both her and the actor who played Romeo were like 15.
Yeah. Right.
And there's a nude scene in it because Romeo and Juliet obviously have sex in the movie. Like, right, that's a plot point.
Yeah.
And they sort of have that scene in the movie. And I remember like when you're in year 9, you're like, oh, boobs. And then as an adult,
sorry,
you're
did
like,
you say they're 15?
They're underage. Yeah. Yeah. So they actually sued. There's a whole thing about it where they basically were like, yeah, that was fucked up. And I think, yeah, they sued the studio and got a bunch of money out of it.
Right.
But yeah, so she's fantastic in this, because when I was watching this, I'm like, she looks really familiar.
Mm.
And then I immediately Googled her name and the first photo that comes up of her is of her as Juliet. And
right.
Like, that's where I know.
Okay,
from.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But yeah, she's fucking awesome in this. And the whole subplot with her and Pete is really great, because it's like, we even were having this conversation, we're like, oh, we don't think it's Pete, but it kind of could be.
It could be. There's, yes, all the signs there for, yep, yeah, you can, yeah, understand why the assumption is there. He sucks so much.
Oh, he's
shit.
A big, hey, I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
I'm glad he's dead.
He deserved
I'm glad
it.
She killed him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that's the implication, is that she kills him.
Yeah, yeah.
And in self-defense, because she's like, oh, it's him, because, yeah, the silhouette matches his silhouette.
Right.
He's gone crazy.
His eyes do look the same, like, yeah, to the, yeah, point where, yeah, even at the end, I'm like, oh, maybe it is him.
Right.
No, I knew it wasn't. I knew that.
There was too much runtime to go, and
it was
setting up for, yeah, a mean ending, I think.
Mm.
Well, yeah, a very cool and big, that whole sequence of like just some of the organized chaos in some of the scenes is just phenomenal. Where there's just like so much happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Our poor subtitles couldn't keep up.
Yeah, they really couldn't. And at one time they just froze on the screen forever.
Yeah, there was a bit, yeah, where they were just stuck, and I was like, this has been up here for a while.
It was during Pete's little piano recital,
right,
which, yeah, fucking sucked so much shit. I'd love to know, was he just so completely rattled by the news in his life that he had a bad day on the
piano? I think that's what it's
supposed
to be.
Or is he just fucking terrible?
I think he just sucks, because he was very arrogant when she was leaving. He did not seem just like, we'll talk later. She's like, I'm not going to change my mind. It's like, we'll see. So I think his level of arrogance is like, whatever, I'll take care of that later.
Yeah.
I've got it in the bag. Let me just do my recital.
Yeah.
So I think he just sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the moment when they're doing the recital, it's like, wow, he's playing for so long here. Like, why are they showing
crazy.
Us so much of it? But then in hindsight, I kind of love it, because I want to know just how bad he is.
Yeah, and
he
just
was
to
bad.
See him getting tortured by yeah. his own.
He's even bad at breaking his piano after.
Yeah, he sucked at that.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those great little things where you're like, oh, this subplot is just an interesting little plot going along. Mm. But it's enough, like, to give us red herrings as an audience, to give enough doubt in Jess's mind that she kills Pete.
Yeah.
But also to do the great thing of, we have a really capable cop in our Zac Efron lookalike. he's fantastic. Very capable. they remove him.
Yeah.
He's then sent off to deal with what he assumes
investigating Pete,
because it's like, well, he made the phone call. He's all over the shop. There's enough evidence to point to him. They walk into the studio. He smashed the piano and he's right. like, something's going on
here.
We
got this guy.
And so the only guy, because the other capable guy is at the phone relay service. And then the only other cop they've got is that Lieutenant Nash, who, you know, if you fuck this up, I'll kill you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
If you then are suddenly left with the scenario is like cooked. If the sergeant makes the call or if he's hanging around, he calls that house and he's like, Jess, I'm going to need you to go outside. Mm. He handles it way better.
Yeah.
She gets out and probably doesn't kill Pete. Which on that hand, though, that's bad. Mm. I want Pete to die.
Yeah, yeah. I think like I definitely don't think Pete is a well man. I don't think he's our killer, but he's not a well man. But yeah, there was so much to love about this. Like one thing I thought was great was like, this is a 70s movie. It's a sorority movie. It's a slasher movie. Like I was expecting little in the way of characters. But like,
it's directed by the guy who made Porky's.
The guy who made Porky's.
That's what I thought we were going to get. Porky's, but with murder.
Yeah. Well, so I was thinking, yeah, these female characters are very well realized in a very authentic way. And so then I did read that there was this strict rule that Clark himself had on set for when it came to writing the female characters was to never objectify them sexually, never give them nude scenes. He wanted these college girls to come off as real people and not disposable horror characters waiting to die.
That was really surprising that there wasn't really any nudity or anything in the movie.
Yeah.
The only nudity, I think, is on those two posters. The guy's ass that Mac comes up.
Yeah.
But I like it. I think it...
I think it's fantastic. And especially because you're like, how many movies have we seen since this one? Again, this is 1974, I think, was it?
Yeah.
And like, how many movies, slasher movies have you seen since it is that exact thing? They are there for to be sexual icons and to be disposable.
Yep.
And this movie's like years ahead of the game going, oh, we're not going to do that.
It's kind of years ahead of the game in everything.
So many aspects, yeah.
There are so many things where we're like, oh, these are just staples of the genre now.
That it's set up.
And we're trying to like figure out, is this the earliest film of that? Like there may be another one or two.
But this and Texas Chainsaw come out the same year.
Yeah. Mm. But like this predated Halloween.
Friday the 13th.
You know, there are elements of this that are in Scream and in everything, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in every slasher.
I did do a bit of digging because I was so impressed by how much this set stuff up. And there are some examples of sort of... So a few of the things that we were really impressed by was the killer's POV. We only ever really had the killer mostly in POV. We definitely never saw their face ever, which I thought...
We saw his eye a lot.
So with that eye.
Oh
yeah,
boy, we'll get to that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I looked into that because obviously Halloween does that to really good effect. So there was one in 1960 called Peeping Tom where it uses the POV.
Yeah.
So that's like, again, it's not, this movie seems to be bringing all these parts together, but that was the first to sort of have that POV. And then another one that we were like, holy shit, it was the first one to do that, which is the call is coming from inside the house. Because obviously that's used from When a Stranger Calls.
When a Stranger Calls, which is a few years later.
I think it really owns it.
That urban legend of the calls. Yes. Like, I think it's, the movie is When a Stranger Calls, but I think the urban legend of the calls coming from inside the house possibly predates this, maybe.
For sure. Yeah. It's like the babysitter murder or something like that is the urban legend. But there were even some, a few things earlier that I found. So there's one called The Severed Arm in 1973, where a radio announcer is called repeatedly by the killer. Then the operator soon discovers, sure enough, they're in the studio on another phone.
Cool.
And then there was also a TV movie with Kirk Douglas terrorizing his ex-wife. And then the police eventually manages to trace the call and figures out it's upstairs.
Yeah.
And that one was same year, 1974.
Cool.
It's a cool trope.
It
was like, when that line came, we all looked at one another and we're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
We'd picked it a bit earlier. We're like, yeah, he's just calling from inside the apartment. Because there's that line about, oh, there's another phone here. Yeah, that's in Mrs. Mac's room, but it's a separate line and the calls haven't... And the cop is like, calls haven't been coming through today. Don't worry about it.
Right. Mm. But what I think this does so well is like, obviously, there's all those elements. There's also Psycho, which is, you know, arguably one of the earliest slashers as well, if you want to call it that. But what I think this does is bring all of them together into this single package. And I think it still is ultimately the proto... what we think of as the proto as slasher now, this really did set up of bringing all those elements together and having that as the template for what slashers will be. So even though there's examples where they got like little bits and pieces, this I think is still the ultimate initial slasher, which is like very cool. It's like weirdly was kind of thrilling to see all this on screen.
I'd argue it's possibly more effective than any of the early ones we've seen. I mean, on this show, we are not big fans of the first Halloween movie.
No. Famously, we didn't like it.
Yeah, I couldn't help but watch this and just constantly throughout just think, this is just shitting on Halloween. And I know that's controversial. Like Halloween's a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
But this just...
It's also even budget.
But yeah, budget
Halloween's
too.
Half the budget.
Yeah, half. But like this is still a relatively small budget film. Yeah. We looked it up. I think it was about $600,000 or something. Which, in the 70s is substantial. But, you know, the look of this Even like, Damo, you commented, there's the police, the detective character.
Right.
And there's just the way that they frame, like the mise-en-scene of the actual, the composition of the scene. They've got like a little things on his desk that are blocking it and making the frame look bigger. Whereas like, I think there are shots in things like Halloween, those low-budget earlier slashes that are just very flat.
Yeah.
Just flat imagery. Whereas this had like color and the set design was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. They really
the characters' outfits were great. And yeah, it didn't lean on, other horrors and slashes lean on the mask and the iconic look of the villain. Right. Whereas this went the complete opposite. It didn't give you any of that.
Exactly. Like, well, I think us not seeing the villain, I do want to quickly talk about that because I think that worked really well. At the start, I was like, fuck, they're doing well to hold off on, like, obviously not seeing the monster. And then, obviously, by the time we get to the end, you're like, no, you never see him.
Yeah.
Not only
do you never see him, but... And he's still out there.
And he's still out there.
It's a fucker of an ending.
The fact, too, that the ending is... Because we learn the repetition of he calls... After he kills.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the film ends with the phone ringing.
Yeah.
And you're like, has he killed someone? Because you don't know if he's killed someone because he's sort of up in the attic playing with the rocket, who they still haven't found.
Right.
Like, they've only... Oh, we've got the bodies. The only bodies they've got are the bodies of the two girls who were killed in Margot's bed.
Yeah.
They haven't gone up to the attic. They haven't found the girl in the rocking chair, which is a horrific... That slow zoom out shot of her just sitting, like, framed in the window... Yeah. Just horrific. And then, the phone call ringing as the credits roll and the cops just standing at the front and, you know, Jess is inside asleep. Does she live? Does she die? Chilling stuff.
Do you have to take the implication from that phone call is that she's dead?
Maybe.
I think, you could definitely read it like that.
Is there anyone else in the house?
Had he killed anyone else without making another phone call, I guess is the question.
Unless he's just calling.
We'd have to go back and watch it. But if that is the thing, he makes the phone call after killing somebody.
Then
she's dead.
Right.
I mean, I think she's dead anyway, to be honest.
Don't think it's great.
So he's still alive in the house. She's there. Like, I think she's going to die, unfortunately.
So there was talks of a sequel and even there was a bit of a plot. So there's various ones that have taken place over the years because there was initially they were going to make one sooner. And I actually read that, and again, this was from IMDb Trivia, so take it with a grain of salt, but like the Johnny C. was inspired by this movie and was actually inspired by what he had heard the sequel was going to be about. And then when it get axed, he made Halloween, apparently kind of using some of the ideas that the sequel was going to be, which is very interesting. But I don't know. There was like years later, there was a sequel where it was going to be Jess was now the den mother or whatever it's called, in which case she would be alive.
The sorority mother. I kind of like that as a story.
Yeah.
There is it's really funny having watched this. There's a remake from like last year or the year before with Imogen Poots.
Right.
And boys, Scaredy Boy's favorite, Kerry Ulls.
Hey. What accent is he doing?
He's doing whatever he's doing. And I'm going to tell you right now, boys, that one sucks shit.
How's his performance?
Sean, what do you think it is?
I imagine terrible, like in literally every other film he's ever been in.
Not every film he's been in.
Like what?
What's
he good in?
He's good in, you know what? We're not getting into it.
Yeah, he can't do it. Well,
another
win for Sean.
Mate, he's good in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
No, he's not.
He's good in Saw.
Keep going.
His Boston accent is impeccable in The Unholy.
Right. Now you're just talking absolute shit.
But the remake is so interesting because they lean in a bit more of the fun. Like the kills are a bit more like Christmas themed. Like I think someone gets killed with like a sharpened candy cane.
Right,
an icicle gets pushed off a thing and kills somebody. And there's some interesting stuff for the first like half of the movie. Imogen Poots is, as she always is, very good. We're never going to watch this.
No. Yeah, probably.
The twist in this is so shit. It's not a serial killer. It's like a coven of toxic masculinity. Powered by a statue of a dead guy.
That feels like it's trying to be more clever than it actually is.
It is very much like, hey, men aren't like this because it's ghosts made them do it.
Right.
It's a bad movie.
The audacity of remaking a great thing and just turning into a pile of shit.
Yeah, and taking away the things that made this so fantastic. Like, again, the ambiguity of the end and the fact that we never see the killer, like, that's what rules about this movie. Like, to swap it for that? Holy hell.
Yeah, it's not great. So we never have to watch it because we've watched perfection.
Yeah, we have. Boys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Were we scared?
Oh! Yeah, it's a spooker.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, no question.
Mostly the phone calls. They are. Yes. They're so unsettling. It's disturbing. It's disgusting.
I will say the phone calls, I think the POV with the breathing, like, and especially when, like, there is that thing of like, yeah, someone's in the house watching them. Like, that is so unsettling. And then the other thing was that continually, I think they did so well, like, for the girl who's in the rocking chair with the plastic over her face to keep cutting back to that.
Yeah.
Like, again, a terrible decision in that it's too effective. Like, it was upsetting every time, as well as that crane shot out the attic window, and you just sort of slightly see her up in the window.
Yeah, you can see her through the window.
And have you boys seen the poster for this movie?
Yeah, no, it's her.
It's her in the fucking rocker with And so, like, again, they knew they had an iconic image and they really wielded it to good effect.
Yeah. His eyes are very scary.
Yes.
That shot when, he's
through the door?
Through the door, Billy. that's fucked.
That's awful.
Because also it lingers for a while. She's sort of frozen and then the camera, like, just sits on his eye and it kind of looks like his pupil, like, moves, but it's just trick of the light. It's fucking scary
shit. What's the house mother's name again?
Mrs. Mac.
Mrs. Mac, when she goes up and you see that hook hanging, you're just like, this is fucked. This is not gonna end well.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't actually see it, but it's still really effective, the editing of it. Like, you see the swing and then it cuts away and you just know, yep, that's gone into her mouth and she's been ripped up through the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fucked.
There's a thing I was reading that, and you might have said come across this too, Damon, in your research, where originally the script was a lot, like, the kills were a lot, it sounds ridiculous, a lot more graphic and you saw more of them.
Okay. Yeah.
And both the Bob Clark and the writer sat down and were like, we should make them more subtle so that you see the outcome. You see the start, but you don't actually see what, like, even with Barb's murder, the shot of that through, like, the glass animals and the shot of just, like,
that
the
was
glass
horrible
unicorn.
To see. Yeah.
And she's sort of flailing around, but you never actually see, like, the stab going in and out and gory whatever.
It's more effective because your mind is filling in the gaps.
Yeah. And then even with Phyllis, who just dies off camera and you find the bodies all, like, twisted up together on the bed. Like, it's really, really effective by not showing you. It doesn't blow its load, boys.
Yeah.
It doesn't blow its load at all.
On it's not blowing its load, because one thing I thought was really terrific as well, and I was not expecting, but, like, had me on edge, which was when the first girl dies and no one knows. No one finds her body. I'm thinking, oh, this is going to take place in one night. We're going to get the slasher thing of he's going to pick them off one by one. It takes place over days, like a couple of days.
I think it's two days. Yeah.
2 days. But still, like, we know she's in the attic and everyone else is just like, geez, what's happened to Jess? Or what? No, not Jess. Whatever her name was.
Yeah. At a certain point, though, we just thought that they did find them.
Yeah.
And then it cut back to the attic. I'm like, oh, no, fuck, they haven't
they
found them.
They still haven't found them by the end of the film.
That dad has no closure.
Right. And that poor dad. And so, like, again, holding off on that. That sort of, again, it's the relief thing almost of like, oh, finally our characters have this very important piece of information. They don't, but we do. So we are constantly on edge for that whole time going, guys, please figure it out so you can finally get a little bit closer to getting in front of this guy.
Yeah, it's fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
It's, I looked a couple of years ago for scary Christmas movies.
Right.
And I, for some reason, I don't know, I come across like Krampus, but nothing really jumped out. And maybe this surely would have come up on a list.
Yeah,
for
sure. Yeah.
I think I just had that thing we talked about at the start where I just thought it was going to be a bit 70s, a little bit goofy, a little bit horny and kind of like not that scary. But like this is, when you really think about it, it's one of the more disturbing ones we've watched.
Yeah.
Yep. You know what it reminds me a little bit of? Some of the kills and some of the sequences and the POV stuff. Is very Zodiac.
Yes.
Like really
and
Zodiac.
Particularly because of that ending where it's like, they didn't catch the killer.
Yeah,
and they maybe never will or whatever. And also, we just don't know anything about the killer.
Exactly, yeah.
Is his name Billy? Maybe.
Well, like, even like, so it's really even taking, we've talked about this for the Halloween episodes, with Michael Myers, obviously, you can't read his face, you can't read his body language. He basically doesn't have any body language because he's just curious by everything that he's doing. And that's what makes it so terrifying because you can't get a read on this guy. For this one, we literally don't even, they don't even give us that. Yep. Like, they give us absolutely nothing of this person.
We're not sure. We're like, maybe his name's Billy. We don't even know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did actually read a fact where basically Bob Clark had worked out a backstory for him, which was, do you boys want to hear it?
Sure.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Cool.
So, yeah, in the backstory, he was abused as a child, locked in the attic, and eventually managed to kill his parents. And then the Agnes he kept referring to was his little sister, who he also tried to kill, but she escaped, giving him this sort of dislike of women and girls.
Yes. Yeah. And the whole thing of, like, Agnes, don't tell them what I've done.
Yeah.
That's juicy. I just, while we're on Bob Clark, we're watching this movie. It's such a good movie. It's well shot.
We've got to talk about some of those shots, but yeah.
So I was like, Bobby Clark, what else has he done? We look him up. He's done a couple of horror movies here and there. He is also the director of one of the worst movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So he did Baby Geniuses, which is a dog shit film.
Yeah.
But its sequel is like, you know those movies that are like the 50 worst movies that have ever been made? The sequel to Baby Geniuses, which I think is called Super Geniuses or something, is widely regarded as utter dog shit. On Letterboxd, I think its average rating is 1.2, 1.1. Wow. It is just
Have you seen it?
A pit. No, but I'm pretty sure friend of the show, Joel Dusham, might have.
Oh, okay. Of course.
He loves to talk. Himself.
That one's prime for a future fucked option on the Neil of Weir.
I was thinking that for eye cramps, having to watch that movie. But yeah, it's widely regarded as being just a terrible, terrible film. Bob Clark, what are you doing, mate? How do you make this?
That's baffling.
And then years later, like, this is early in his career.
Yeah, yeah.
Years later, you're making shit.
Right.
Bobby, what are you doing? He also made A Christmas Story.
Cocaine?
Maybe cocaine.
Maybe.
Yeah,
but he also made A Christmas Story. So he's got runs on the board. How does he make fucking just two dog shit films?
I haven't seen that dog shit film. That surprises me that he's capable of doing it because this is like pretty high level filmmaking.
Yes.
Some of the shot transitions are so creative in this. It's awesome.
I could go through Bob Clark's life and find out, a bit like Donald Pleasance, it's always alimony, right?
Right.
That could be it.
Yeah, there was one scene transition where it was someone screaming, obviously because of the killer, and then it cuts to a telephone ringing. So like having, obviously, it's so easy to go for a visual connecting point between scenes, which also is really great. And a lot of movies don't think to do it anymore, it seems like. Where it can even just be something as simple as like you're looking at the moon, you cut to the circle of a porthole or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But to have the audio cue match up in that transition, I just was like, holy hell, this is next level. This is great.
I mean, I'm sure we've seen stuff like that in movies that's a great tool to use.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one really stood out.
Yeah.
And it's like, and watching him do a few of them throughout the movie, how come they don't do stuff like this as much anymore?
I agree, man.
This is like prime time filmmaking.
It's
this
so exciting to see. Yeah.
It feels like it rewards the viewer. You see it and you're like, oh, that was fucking good. Yes, well done.
Loving this. You feel like you're in capable hands, which is also great.
Capable hands. I'm just going through his filmography because it is fascinating. So he does Black Christmas.
Yeah.
He does A Christmas Story and Porky's. He does another horror movie called Dead of Night, which comes out the same year, which is a similar kind of vibe about a guy just going around killing people.
Right.
But he's got Baby of Geniuses. He's got some belters. He's got a movie called Rhinestone, which stars Dolly Parton and Sly Stallone.
Oh.
And the premise is a big time country singer brags she could turn anyone into a country singing star. And she's out to prove up she can live up to her talk when she recruits a cab driver from New York City as a country singer.
Oh, boy.
Sly Stallone singing.
Sly Stallone being taught how to be a country singer by Dolly Parton.
I love it so much. Can we do that for Scary Boys?
Yeah, we might have to. But he's got some artists. He's done Porky's too. And then there's a period in the 2000s where he must just be making shit. So he does Baby Geniuses, Super Geniuses. He does a movie called Blonde and Blonder, which stars Pamela Anderson and Denise Richards.
Oh, wow.
As two blondes who are mistaken as international mob hit killers.
Yeah. Right.
A movie called Karate Dog.
Oh, wow.
Which stars Chevy Chase and John Voight.
So that's in the 2000s. When was he making these ones that you said were utter trash?
That's these ones in the 2000s. Yeah.
They're in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Look, that's 30 years after Black Christmas prime time. I think how many filmmakers can, still be pumping out good stuff 30 years later? Very few, really.
I mean, it's just baffling. Your
big guns
are
doing it, but I understand it.
He goes from big to just like...
If you told me that he made one of the biggest turds of all time in the same sort of time frame as this, I'd be like, wow, how?
Yeah, and obviously you can go, well, Porky's is dated pretty badly, but at the time it was a huge film.
I've got to be honest, I don't even know what the fuck that is.
It's just like a frat. Okay. Boys.
Porky's.
Yeah,
it's just a very horny movie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's got that, the infamous Porky scene is them spying on Like, they spy on girls in the shower.
Okay.
Like, that's the scene that everyone knows.
Okay, so he left all the sensibilities that he'd gathered.
Right, what he purposely didn't do in this film, he saved it all for Porky's.
And then he made a sequel, Porky's 2.
Yeah, okay.
So Porky's is basically a bunch of, like, high schoolers want to lose their virginity, and it takes place over one night, and then the sequel is the next day.
Right. Okay.
Which I kind of like as a movie. Like,
yeah, sure.
You know, do your sequel, there's the next day.
Sure.
Yeah. Did our characters act wisely or foolishly?
There's so many people doing clever things.
Mm.
I understand the logic of why Jess ignores Lieutenant Nash.
Right.
Because she's like, I've got to save my friends. Because she still, we know they're dead.
Yeah.
She still thinks they're alive. Well, she's unsure. She has a heartbreak, but she's screaming at them to please answer. And she's like, I'm going to get the fire poker. I'm going to find them.
Yeah.
She makes some smart choices.
I don't think that's unwise. I think that's been a good friend.
Ultimately,
I'm not going to hold that against
Nash her. Nash is an idiot.
Oh,
that cop sucks.
Yeah.
He's a moron.
Yeah,
he's a bonehead.
Yep.
The cops are pretty incompetent here. Pete sucks. He doesn't make wise choices. I just want to mention that he sucks just one more time.
And, like, ultimately, I suppose you could argue the detective makes the wrong choice. Like, it's the wrong choice, but I don't know if it's a foolish choice of going, well, Pete might be the killer here.
Because that seems logically tie up a lot of things.
And he's just like, I'm just going
to
check up on him. We've still got a cop outside. We've still got all this. We know that the cop has been killed.
Yeah. And also, he seems like a decent cop, like, as opposed to Nash completely. Like, he's at least making an effort and he seems to care. And, you know, when he's on the phone with him, he's like, are you okay? And that sort of stuff.
And he takes it seriously and he sets up the wiretap and everything. Like, they're really actually going to great lengths to make sure they're, and even like how Nash misses the point that, like, well, a girl's gone missing from this sorority house. We've already had one teenager show up dead and now they're getting weird phone calls. You didn't think you maybe want to connect the dots there, mate?
Yeah, he's just an idiot.
Yeah,
he doesn't know what fellatio is. And that's very funny.
Yeah.
But you can't really fault them.
No, they, I think,
they do as best they can. Like, and even thinking, Barbara's just, like, she's just been in with Barbara.
Yeah.
And she's had that asthma panic attack. She's calmed her back down. She's put her back to sleep. She then goes up, some carolers come and sing.
Yeah.
Foolish that the carolers are even out.
Right.
And it's very funny that someone then comes up being like, get the kids back in the car.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be out here. Like, a kid's been murdered. There's missing girls everywhere. Yeah, like, it's a dangerous time to be out.
Yeah, exactly right. So, overall, no. Like, I think the nutter upstairs mostly kind of gets away with luck more than anything.
It's the fact that he goes out into the street and kills the cop, though, to me, that's like, when did you leave? Like, why are you so your mind is really organized enough to have picked up on that and to have like effectively done that without anybody seeing
you? Yeah, that's
the
one plot point they didn't really...
Yeah.
Didn't really,
that was just a convenient thing rather than a... I don't logically think that makes sense. I'd prefer it if he doesn't leave the house.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, and we don't see it. And it's his killing a guy instead of girls, where obviously that's his whole thing. Like, I think
he seems too unhinged to be able to pull off a plan smoothly.
Yeah, that plot point didn't sit right for me. Even, there could have just been another reason why the cop had to leave or something like that. I don't know. Otherwise, I think for our actual main characters, they did as well as they could. It was a tricky situation.
They did everything they could. They just were in the path of madness.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, boys, what would we do if we were in the path of madness?
So, I think we obviously can't be in the sorority. Maybe we're in a little scaredy frat.
Yeah.
And we're like...
We're the next door neighbours.
We're the next door neighbours.
Scaredy often Studios is next door
to that sorority house.
And we're hearing a lot of phone calls.
Can I just say, I'm getting no work done.
Gamma Psi coward.
Yeah. That's good shit. So, I think we're often over at the parties there. We've decided to help our friends out.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is, are we searching more of the house? Would we search that attic?
I don't know if that's your first... This is why they weren't foolish. Your first thought isn't, oh, he's probably upstairs. Like, you're not thinking that because they don't... Again, this is what works so well. They don't even know...
Claire never made it out of the house.
Made it out of the house. Exactly. So the house feels like a safe location when it's actually the most dangerous spot to be in.
Yeah.
So it's very tricky.
We maybe catch him when he goes to kill that cop maybe then.
Maybe that's our best bet.
Yeah, yeah.
We see him kill the cop.
Right.
And we know it's not Pete, though.
Plot-wise, this doesn't work.
Maybe the cop comes to us and he's like, we got the guy. And I'm like, it's not Pete. It's like, it has to be. Like, no.
Pete's a tool. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think he's out killing people.
There's a chance we're recording a podcast. We hear something outside on the street, open the curtain, see a man kill a cop, and we just go, back to the podcast.
You know what? That is not my business, boys. So anyway, let's talk about Black Christmas. I think also maybe the only thing we might do that might help Jess in the long run is when they're like, oh, we'll let her stay here. But like, no, she can stay at our place.
Right. Yeah,
just because this place is fucked. Like, put her in the place next door, get her parents to come pick her up from there. We'll go somewhere else. We'll keep an eye on her. We're recording podcasts downstairs.
Yeah.
We're wholesome boys.
Right. That might be, do you mean at the end?
Yes.
Yeah, that might be the only thing to save her. After all the commotion and all that, we just go, right, come and stay next door while the police properly clear the scene and all that. Even though they gave up, didn't they? They just left.
Well, they're going to do it in the morning, I think.
Yeah. We'll just be like, well, you're alone there. Why don't you just come and crash here and we'll just stay up, recording our podcast and make sure you're fine.
We're doing our podcast in our one, not in their house.
Yeah, no, in our one. Yeah. Okay. We're next door in our
frat. I was going to say, maybe like if we were doing it in their house and he does the phone call and in the background you can hear very, very softly our three dumb voices chatting away, getting excited. And that's how they figure out he's in the house, because you're getting us coming through.
Yeah, that's good.
That could work.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I just don't think we can stop this guy.
I think if you come on one, two, if we actually find him and come face to face with him, which of course none of these girls really do other than Jess, and she does the right thing of running away. But for us, like, he's definitely a murderer. He's also he's obviously unhinged. So, like, for me, I actually find that, like, he's capable of anything, but, like, but he's not clever. He's not smart. So, I think if we got into a situation, which this movie doesn't really allow, so maybe we shouldn't allow ourselves that either. But if we did have a one-on-one confrontation with him, I think, we'll be fine. Yeah.
He's not rational, with the exception of killing the cop.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, which is again why that doesn't sit right.
Yeah, it's just a lack of information that sort of holds people back from stopping this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
If we can somehow find out that he is in,
do you reckon
house
if you saw that eye, you'd just fucking poke at it?
I mean, I'd probably shit myself.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I'd probably do the same thing she does: push the door on him, run away.
Yeah.
I think he's a maniac, but he is rational enough that he knows to hide.
Is this true?
He like backs away. He waits. Like, he doesn't just come in there and just go like completely.
I suppose another thing to consider: are we like our girlfriend, where we've had a bit too much to drink? This is like what, Christmas Eve or Christmas or whatever. Have we had a few too many eggnogs, whiskeys?
This is a factor as well.
Yes.
I mean, we've definitely had too many.
Maybe we just die.
We get killed watching a Muppets Christmas Carol next door.
Well, I mean, that's a 5-star time.
If you're going to go, that's the way to go.
That's the way to do it.
And then we become the ghosts of Christmas past.
That's actually pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I'll cop that.
Hey, that's a Christmas win.
Yeah.
It's a Christmas miracle voice.
Merry Christmas, every one of us.
One more thing, though. Can we, in the act of being killed by this guy, also wound him to the point where he dies, just so he doesn't go on to hurt anybody else?
Yeah, that's true.
And then we're heroes.
Yeah,
No. He is mesmerized by Kermit. He kills us, and then Kermit comes on screen, and he sits down, and the cops find our bodies. They find him standing there holding.
And he makes one more phone call, and it's to turn himself in.
Yeah.
The cops come in just as Michael Caine's singing his song.
Yeah. You there, boy. What day is it?
So everybody has a good time.
Yes, all right.
Turn this thing around.
Well, that's all this geek talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
I've been Tom.
And a very Merry Christmas to all you listeners. I hope, however you're celebrating, you're having a truly, truly wonderful holiday season. I'll leave all the usual spiel and just say, if you'd like to reach out, you can do so at 3scaredboys@gmail.com, or you can find us on Instagram at Scaredy Boys Podcast, or on Twitter at Scaredy Boys, or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
And I'm at Awkward Trade.
Stay scared, everyone.
I'm in the Christmas spirit, Thomas!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.